Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Dean, what is normal?
Oh, boy. What is normal now? Who knows? What is normal to you? I don't know.
I don't know either. That's the whole point.
Like, this year is what's normal. Who knows?
Exactly. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people, especially in the last 6 to 8 months, say, when we get back to normal.
Right.
What does that even mean?
What does it even mean? Are they just idiots at this point saying that we're going to go back to normal?
That's the whole point. And that's right. What we're going to talk about today on the podcast.
Fair enough.
Discuss the idea that there is no such thing as normal, and that maybe even trying to get back to normal is doing yourself and maybe your business a disservice right now.
100%. I would have to agree with that right out of the gate.
There you go. All right. So that's the topic of discussion today. It is a Dean and John special. But wait, don't skip to the next podcast. We promise this is going to be entertaining. It's time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right. So as I mentioned, our topic today, I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of normalcy. Like I said up top, you know, and since the pandemic began, and, you know, and it was one of those things where, like, you know, maybe in March and April, you thought, like, okay, well, when things get back to normal, we've got to do this.
Yeah, this is only going to last whatever.
Right. You know, we thought maybe a few weeks.
Or the hopeful people were saying that, right?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, it stretched on and on and on. We're still more or less in the thick of it. Things might even be getting worse sooner than they get better. Mm-hmm. We got winter coming up. We got a whole new year to deal with. There's a lot of stuff going on still. It's going to be a while before at least any normal when it comes to the idea of, like, post-pandemic. If nothing else, that's going to be sometime in the future. But more importantly, there's been a lot that's changed and a lot that's happened because of the pandemic. And, like, any kind of crisis or any kind of shift in the business world, in the marketing world, in just the world in general, there's usually going to be lasting consequences. So it's kind of what I wanted to talk about, because I think the idea of going back to normal is never a great statement anyway. Like, I think if you're a business and you say, well, we can't wait to get back to where we were a year ago or 10 months ago, you're probably not on a good track anyway. No one should ever be thinking about trying to get back to a way things were a while ago. Now, I get that there are some things that we're doing very differently now that are not the way we want to be conducting business, and we want to get back.
Yep.
But I think there's this idea of, like, looking back that we need to kind of move ourselves away from and start thinking about looking forward. And what has changed that needs to stay changed? What has changed that we need to find new ways to do? And then maybe what are a couple things that we go back to?
So
let's riff a little bit about that. So I want to start and talking about our channel, you know, the reseller channel, the world of IT, and all the industries that we work with. So, Dean, I'll let you kick off. Kind of tell me some of the big things that have obviously changed in the channel in the last, you know, 8-9 months. I'm starting to lose track of how many months it's been at this point. But, you know, in 2020, let's just call it that, because it's basically in the bulk of this year. So what are some of the really big things you think that have changed?
Well, I mean, I think the first one right out of the gate is face-to-face meetings, right? Because, you know, in the channel, networking is such a key component to what people do and how business grows and how you network and how you get innovative solutions out to the marketplace. I mean, here at Blue Star, we love doing that. We love creating those environments where people can do face-to-face and get in front of one another and ask, hey, what are you doing? What solutions are you working on? Oh, wait a minute, I got an idea here. And that's one of the whole premises behind some of the events that we do is that specific reason. So when you think about it, face-to-face is, like, not happening. It's just it's just not happening during a pandemic. And really, I think one of the challenges, not just in the channel, but in business, is that networking aspect. And so a lot of companies are trying to get creative, trying to do things that are online, that are live, that are virtual, and these types of things. But I'm telling you, it's not the same as in person. And, you know, now that we're 7 months, 8 months into it as we're recording this, it's nice to get in front of people from time to time, even though it's very limited. You know, it might only be 2-3 people in the room or something like that, and you're spaced out, but it's different than the people that are in your house, or just where we're all at right now. I love my family more than anything in the world, but man, it's good to get outside the house, and do some of that face-to-face. So I would put that right on the top of the list. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, it's funny you just mentioned that. Like, I have honestly reached the point where I feel like you and our producer, Mark, are kind of like part of my little family at this point.
We're in the,
outside of my regular family, you know, you two are the ones I see almost. I probably have seen the two of you more than I've seen my mother in the last, you know, several months, you know, you know, obviously trying to keep her from getting sick, but you know, just the fact that I'm here on a, you know, at least a semi-regular basis recording with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely a big one. And obviously it's a huge impact for us and our business. You know, Blue Star conducts a lot of conferences and meetings and events where we want to get people together so that they can network and mm-hmm. meet new partners and develop new relationships. Mm-hmm. I've got to think, obviously, for a lot of our VAR partners and vendors as well, it's a huge part of their business that being able to meet someone in person and being able to show them a product or mm-hmm. talk about your solutions, talk about your value adds, it's hard to do when you have to suddenly shift to a distance-only model, regardless of whatever technology you might be able to implement there. So I think, go ahead.
And when you hang out in that area, I mean, so you can parlay onto that marketing. So, you know, because obviously networking to a great one extent or another is a component of marketing, one could argue, but marketing has changed, right? Because if you relied a lot on interpersonal, on events, on face-to-face, you can't do that now. So you got to pivot like we have to different types of activities that still keep engagement, still keep education going out there, which is, a component of the face-to-face. But your marketing has changed. So,
right. So
I think a lot of companies obviously have gone through in the channel, have changed the way that they're marketing, much more digital now, much more engagement on that type of a level, and you got to get creative there too. Yeah.
Well, and you have to think also that there's probably a lot of companies that didn't really do much marketing, if any.
Right.
You know, maybe just, you know, the bare bones, you know,
well,
website.
They relied on going to events.
Exactly.
Right? Oh, well, yeah. we've got these events in our budget, and it's 3-4 major ones out of the year.
Yep.
We send our salespeople and they come back with a bunch of business cards,
right.
and that's how we grow the business.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that
ain't
happening.
If you look back, our very, very first podcast was about digital marketing in a crisis.
Yep.
And the idea of how to shift and pivot. So hopefully if you've been listening since the beginning, you got some tips
right.
to kind of help you get
if through
this.
If not,
go
back.
Yeah, if not, go back. If you're still struggling with that and you're still not sure how to do a marketing plan, go back, listen to the first episode. It may not sound as fantastic as we do now. We were still figuring things out, but there were some really good tips in there from James Cordier,
100%.
Our digital marketing manager.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think that's a big part of it. Communication, obviously, I think it kind of ties all of that together. Like, mm-hmm. you know, for some folks, it probably got a lot harder to figure out how to communicate, you
mm-hmm.
know. You know, if you weren't someone that liked to pick up the phone a lot, or if you weren't someone that typically relied on email, mm-hmm. you know, to communicate, if you expected to be like, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of salespeople I know that are road warriors that mm-hmm. love to get out there and travel and be on the road every day.
Yep.
Constantly knocking on doors, walking into businesses,
yep.
being someone who's
rubbing
facing,
elbows.
Yeah,
hey,
exactly.
How's it going right
and
now?
That person may be someone who's not as good on the phone or mm-hmm. not as good sending emails. Maybe that, you know, they don't craft a great message in an email.
Mm-hmm.
So hey, I get that. That might be very problematic also.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I think let's shift to and talk a little bit about, I'm sure for, you know, and we've discussed this on some of our podcasts where we've talked about supply chain and manufacturing. Mm-hmm. You know, just the process of getting stuff to people now is different too. You know, especially early on when this was all kind of just beginning and there was a lot of like legit lockdowns happening. And, you know, there's a lot of, we don't know what to do. We don't know what we can and can't do at this time. Stuff was closed off. Stuff was shut down. People, you know, businesses had to close entirely and couldn't even accept deliveries of new products. So from a shipping perspective, production, supply chain, there was so much disruption that happened then. And I think there's some, you know, some sense of, quote, normalcy coming back there.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's normalcy with a twist. You know, like maybe you're able to get stuff back out again, but it's not the same process as you did before. You can't have, you know, if you have run a distribution center, you can't have, you know, 60, 70 people all milled around the same area together anymore doing that. I know our warehouse has changed dramatically.
Completely changed.
This. So any thoughts on that, like as far as the supply chain side of things?
Well, number one, I think what the pandemic is, when you take a step back and you think about it, one of the initial cracks in our overall society and the way that we were going about life was and is supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the most immediate ones. PPE, ventilators, mm-hmm. I mean, some of these emergency type things, it was very apparent that supply chains that were relied upon in certain ways were flawed.
Right.
You know, flawed from a country sovereignty standpoint to, which is big picture, really big,
right.
you know, how do we stay sovereign when all of our manufacturing is not done here?
Right.
And I'm talking about in the United States, probably Europe as well. scary, right? Because, you know, now you're not in control of the stuff that you needed, we needed at that point in time to facilitate, you know, proper mitigation of the pandemic. So it just, it showed huge cracks there. It showed cracks in food supply, which was, you know, one way to get people nervous is to start, any kind of expression or indication that there might be an issue with the food supply.
Yeah. And we saw that when everybody was making runs on the department store or grocery stores. Everybody's like, I got to go buy up everything they can, the toilet paper shortage, everyone, you panic. And especially when there's not, a lot of information, when there's not, a real cohesive strategy going on and you don't really know what to do, then I think we talked about this at some other point in another podcast, like, look what happens like here in our tri-state area, we're in the Cincinnati vicinity, and whenever there's a major snowstorm coming in, people panic and run out and buy up bread and milk. It's always the gag,
right.
The bread and milk's gone.
Exactly.
You
know? Snow's coming.
Right. And mind you, we don't get snowstorms that literally keep us in our homes for a week.
Very rare. Weeks? No. But rare. It's a couple days maybe, right?
And even that is like,
Give it 12 hours and you can get back out.
You could get out if you had to. But you see people buying up and panicking about stuff, thinking they're going to be stuck indoors for a long time.
Right.
And this was something that we literally did think we might be stuck indoors for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I get that aspect then, and we weren't quite ready for it. And there was a huge, a lot of panic around it. And again, it's abated to some extent since then, but I still feel at the same time people are still a little more cautious about what they're doing and what they're buying.
Absolutely. So that was the headline, right? It was the supply chain issues that we were having. And to your point, man, we've seen, especially since we're kind of eye level with what happens in supply chain technology, we can see some of the innovation, some of the rapid adaptation of solutions that were out there that we were already doing. But man, a lot of these manufacturers are kind of leapfrogging where they thought they would be. And there's been that tech crunch that we've talked about. Yeah, maybe it was on the whiteboard for 2 years. We're going to put some automation in the warehouse. Nope, whoop, got to do it now.
Yep.
Type of a thing. So we've been kind of interested, or we've had that interesting optic to see into that. But really, so you had all this at what I'll call external cracks in the supply chain. But now bringing it back to the channel, I think our channel specifically, is still struggling in the sense that a lot of manufacturing has shifted. A lot of supplies to the technology that we distribute, there's some stress and strain happening there that I don't think is going to go away. And actually, it's kind of manifesting itself now here at the end of 2020 into 2021, where component parts are hard to get. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit harder because again, some of that global shifting of where things are produced and things like that, supplies, raw goods. It's the whole supply chain is just kind of, just across the board to me has had like this reset button in a way of, wow, are we doing this the right way?
Right.
Is just in time's great, but not when you need store shelves and not when you need to scramble now to get N95 masks. And so there's certain things that I'm sure will be looked at differently, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I had not really thought about that before, the idea of the whole just-in-time inventory. And I know that's the big buzzword
in
distribution and supply chain of, not having too much, not having too little, having just what you need at the right time, which falls apart in a hurry when the need escalates at a dramatic pace. And again, obviously, stuff can happen, like a snowstorm, like, a natural disaster of some sort. That's always going to change things. But even that stuff still tends to be relatively short term compared to what we've been dealing with this year.
Yeah.
So I am going to be curious to see, and we'll talk more about future stuff, obviously, in a bit. But like, I will be very curious to see when you come out the other side of this and when people think like, all right, well, we're done with that now. Like, do you ever like even think about going back to that old style again and go back to thinking like, oh, well, we can just do everything just in time again, realizing like, look, I hope in our lifetime we never see anything like this again.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that doesn't mean you shouldn't prepare for it.
True. But I think the smart move there is, at least, and again, I'm coming back from a sovereignty of a country standpoint, essential goods. It seems like we have a better control over that so that we're not relying on offshore type of production to make essentials. The stuff that's critical, it seems like that needs to be brought in house. Other things that are just in time. I mean, just in time on my McDonald's kids, whatever thing that comes
right,
in there.
Right.
In the, Not so important. If that's on the slow boat that's coming over, you know, then okay.
Right.
Then that's maybe okay. You see what I'm saying? So I don't know.
You won't get to kick off your, you know, Lion King 5 promo or something, you know, at the right time, but whatever, you know, like as long as there's a hamburger in there, the kid can still eat. That's the more important part.
But when you talk about things of what's not going to go back to the normal, I mean, I just think supply chain in so many ways is, to your point, being very innovative right now, not going to be kind of the way it was. Some changes in where production are happening and things like that. It's going to modify. It kind of needs to modify.
Yeah, I'd agree. Definitely does. Well, I think two industries also we should maybe dive a little bit deeper into as well is retail slash hospitality. You can kind of combine those together in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And healthcare, which obviously have been impacted in different ways. You know, quickly on the healthcare side, I mean, we obviously understand what was impacted there, you know, especially early on and, you know, as different waves have come and gone in different areas of, you know, experienced spikes in cases, you know, just the overwhelming amount of people that have been there that have had to, you know, to check into a hospital. But then on the other side too, you know, I think like healthcare, as far as like your traditional, you know, general practitioners or dentists, you know, or, you know, that aren't like, you know, related to the pandemic services have probably seen some decline and seen some trouble. You know, in hospitals, there was a lot of concern about elective surgery, obviously.
Oh, 100%.
They shut down elective surgeries for
a lot
of hospitals.
They're hurting right now, believe it or not. Yeah.
And that's a huge part of the business for healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that's coming in to get something, not because it's an emergency, but because it's something they need to have done. And those are usually very expensive procedures, and a lot of money comes out of that.
Yep.
So, you know, huge impacts that happened there, you know, right alongside the fact that at the same time, they also had to ramp up operations to deal with a pandemic and, you know, thousands more people potentially coming in, you know, in a week or a month's time than they would normally get before. So I have to feel for healthcare there.
And I feel for them too, because, you know, I think about it. They went from a world where, I mean, being on the front lines in healthcare, God bless them, it's not something that I could do. I mean, I cut my finger and it's like, oh, I got to sit down. So I'm not that person. I know that there's people out in the world and they're a breed of folks, but they went from a world that, you know, they're dealing with multiple different things. And a lot of that still happens in the ER because life is still happening. Right. People are still breaking
bones. It was unpredictable before a pandemic.
Right. Yeah. But for all those other folks, I mean, it's almost become a singular focus where everybody, it's all hands on deck. Dealing with COVID, and or at least that's it. So I'm sure there's got to be certain monotony to what they're doing now. It's okay, you know, it's just more COVID patients, more. I don't know. You know, it's going to have that manufacturing type of a feel to it that, you know, it's just the same thing day after day that these healthcare workers are dealing with.
Yeah, and I think there's
doing more testing, more swabs.
And it's created a definite strain in our healthcare system.
Well, I think so.
The likes of which we hadn't seen. But it was also one of those things that I feel like if you look close enough, you knew it was there. And people in healthcare would probably tell you, like, there's only so much we can do and only so much we can handle.
Yep.
And if something like this were to come along, we might be strained further than we can actually handle. You know, and I think they've done an amazing job as it is, but obviously we've seen cracks, we've seen breaks, we've seen some tears. And I, you know, that's something I think in the future is going to have to be addressed. You know, the understanding, like, look, there's stuff that you're going to have to be able to deal with healthcare. There's ways you're going to have to be able to make this system work effectively, you know, and kind of dive into our channel, you know, just the idea of, like, you know, having a strong, like, IoT aspect of healthcare, or having a strong, you know, communication with structure within healthcare, you know, EHR, having universal EHR if possible, you know, making sure that our records can follow us wherever we go, and making it easy to, you know, to patient shows up at any facility, you know exactly who they are and what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff I think is going to have to grow and change after this.
100%. And when you think about it, some of the automation that we've talked about, now I'm staying specifically in healthcare because I remember a story that I was just heard on the news just the other day that, and they were talking to an ER doctor, or maybe he was a head of one of the hospitals. And his point was, you know, our issue right now isn't the fact that we can grow capacity as it relates to beds, you know, throwing up more beds and in other facilities, and the infrastructure wasn't his challenge. His challenge was in the people manning that. So he can increase his beds 2-3 times, and that's not a problem. Yeah, we can order the beds, we can get the beds in here, we can put them down at the convention center, no problem. He's like, but I don't have the manpower to man all that. So that's where the strain's coming from. So when you think about it, you know, from an AI or not a telemedicine, but like an automated healthcare type of a practice where, machine learning, and you know, we're not there piece. Today, but the analytics piece, this patient has these symptoms, and so the doctors and the caretakers are relying on some of this automation to take care of some of that, and, and they're not having to do the, I don't know, it'll be fascinating to see how that happens, but I guess that's how you scale up in during a pandemic. Otherwise, you and I are going to become nurses, and you know, if it gets too bad, and I got to start taking blood, and
nobody wants. I mean, I can. I can handle a shot fairly well, I guess. You know, I've had to do some of that in the past, but like, you know, you don't want me.
Right.
You don't want me going in for surgery. You don't want me. Honestly, you don't want me doing much of anything with you. You know, I probably don't have the greatest bedside manner either. Probably be like, all right, I get it. You're in pain.
If that's my duty, I'll do it. But I don't know that I'm the best person.
Yeah.
Doing it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, God bless them that are and that do that every day. So I think there is definitely going to be some impact there, and there's going to have to be some change that has to be managed and figure out.
Well, I'm hopeful that some of this innovation and some of this technology that we talk about, again, AI, ML, those types of things, it's going to have dramatic effects in healthcare. We have talked about it.
Yeah.
When you go back to where you were too on restaurants and hospitality, man, a lot has changed there as well. And it's what I feel. I was reading another story about this, and it kind of connected with me on the restaurant side. So yeah, we're 7-8 months into this, and those restaurants made the pivot so that they could handle curbsides, because they could handle pickup and delivery, those types of things. And so at least in my neighborhood, a couple restaurants did close, but it's not as dramatic, to be quite honest with you, as I thought it was going to be, because a lot of that's still happening. But what I was reading an article that, so if the restaurants made it this far, they're actually just bobbing on the water, because a lot of the things that were profitable for them, people are not buying as it relates to online. And that is specifically appetizers, drinks, and desserts.
Yep.
Those three things. Point. Now, I wasn't a restaurateur, but I know that I just rang the bell for anybody who's ever been in a restaurant.
That makes sense.
Dude, that's where we make our money. Appetizers, drinks, and desserts. And those are three things that people do not order when they do it online. So
they order desserts, but you know, it's just
maybe. But it's not that waiter or waitress coming up to you and saying, hey, how about it?
There's no upselling going on.
No upselling going on.
At least, you know, if you're, there could be, you know,
could be.
And we've talked about that when we've talked about online ordering and software and kiosks and whatnot, this idea that like you can put that stuff to work for you doing that job that maybe your people may not have even been doing when they are in person. But you're right. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's not.
Which
and the
is
drinks
fine.
Is I think is a big part of it too.
Like, absolutely.
I mean, how many times like, you know, I remember back in the day when I would, you know, go out with my buddies and we used to go hang out at Applebee's on Friday nights,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
And we'd, you know, get some chicken wings, get something cheap or whatever, but then you'd knock back four or five beers before you left.
Well, not even that.
No,
even if you didn't serve, you know, alcohol at McDonald's, that's where they're making. Well, of course they wrap it into their things. But anybody who even soft drinks were highly profitable.
Yep,
I mean,
it
cost 5 cents to make that. Believe you me, I used to work in a restaurant. It's like pennies to create the cola.
Even if you're charging a dollar, you're still making like, you know,
so high profit,
700% profit or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the restaurants are really struggling there. And so when you think about it, the normal has to shift. In the sense that, they have to figure out how to get more profitable things in the bag when you're shopping online. And, and you know, where you were going there was, I think there's the capacity to do it on a browser and an app. And hey, how about, because, and some of them do it really well already, you know, I mean, I'm scrolling through and doing my DoorDash or whatever. And some of them are like very overt about it.
Right.
Oh, you ordered this. You should also order these things at a $2 increase or whatever. I think that, you know, obviously some of that'll happen, but, it's been really fascinating to see that. I think a lot of restaurants, you know, got that message very early on, still continue to get the message that they got to pivot to the online and enabling that now. Okay. So that's floating them, but now they got to figure out how to get profitable again.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Well, then let's kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about 2021. You know, we've been sitting, you know, we've been all year talking about 2020 and this awful, terrible, no good, very bad year, you know, that has just not gone the way anyone would have expected or wanted to happen.
Right.
You know, I hate to say this, but 2021 may not be terribly different for a while.
Right.
You know, there's, I mean, we're almost there, you know, like we're 2 months away at this point. We're recording this late October, like we're 2 months away from a new year. And there's a lot of stuff that's not going to change in the next 2 months to make it so that we can just literally get running back out and live life the way we were doing before.
Yep.
So, you know, we're looking at, you know, a good chunk potentially of the year to come where things are still going to be off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to kind of talk a little bit about, like, what do we still see continuing to change over the next year? Mm-hmm. What do we think may never be the same? Mm-hmm. And where is there light at the end of the tunnel at this point? So mm-hmm. I think one thing I want to first start talk about, because it's kind of where we let off things, conferences and meetings.
Yep.
Which is a big business for the companies that host and put these things on. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine anybody that has a big conference center or a resort of some sort or whatever has been hurting even more than usual right now when no one's booking these kinds of events.
Yep.
And then companies like ours or like some of our partners that typically rely on these kind of events as mm-hmm. well. Again, I don't think we're getting back to this for a little while. You know, I'm hoping we can do it sooner than later. Hopefully before the year is out next year, we're able to get back to some of these events. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to look different, though. That's kind of what I want to talk about is, you know, coming out the other end of this, you know, are we still going to get back to the days where, like, everyone's just cramming into a giant room together and milling about? Or do you feel like there's still going to be some hesitancy and some caution, even when – I mean, let's be honest, not everyone's going to get vaccinated. And if they mm-hmm. do, it's going to be a long time before that happens. But do you think we're ever going to get back to a point where everyone just feels comfortable rushing into a room again and shaking hands and hugging each other? And like, because, you know, if you think about it, like you look overseas, you know, like, you know, some of the Asian countries that have had to deal with pandemics before, but they're obviously much more higher population density than we see here in America as mm-hmm. well. And they, for them, like, mask wearing has become a way of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and figuring out how to handle stuff like this and managing crowds has become kind of a way of life. Do you think that's going to happen here? Or are we going to kind of, you know, still get back to where we were before?
Yeah, I think we will get back there. I just don't know what the timeline is. Right. Is it going to happen in a year? No. 2 years? Probably not. Three, four, five. Okay. Right. And here's one of the main reasons why. And maybe I'm speaking mostly of Americans, North American folks. I don't know. People like to travel. And so, you know, that's another industry that's been hit hard is the travel and entertainment industry. And so now I'm talking from a business perspective. One of the nice things about being able to be in a role where you do have to go to those events is the fact that you get to travel. And mm-hmm. so I think people like to travel. And I think that's going to be one of those lures that brings people back, you know, right. Hey, the next time some show is promoted in Las Vegas, you're going to have a certain amount of the contingency of the people out there saying, oh, you know, Vegas is always fun to go to once a year. And I haven't been there in 3 years. Right. So let's go on back. So I think part of that, honestly, I'm just being candid. Some people like to travel.
Yeah.
And that's one of the perks of going to some of these events. I do think that there's just a dramatic difference between online interaction and in-person interaction that is not going to go away. So again, I don't know if it's a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road. We will, I think, get back at some point in time to having, stuffed rooms where people are all, you know, big conferences, because I just think that's part of our DNA and our nature.
Right.
It might look different. I don't know if people are still wearing masks then or not.
Or are we going to ask for, like, vaccination records before people show up?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I could see that potentially being a thing, you know.
Totally.
I mean, you know, I know, like, kids go to school, you know, there's plenty of schools that require it, you know, I could see that becoming something in the business world. So, you know, if someone's feeling cautious.
Yes. If it's still hanging around. I mean, just today I heard that, or when it was last night, United Airlines is going to require tests before you get on their flights. So, you know, they have the rapid test. It's not as accurate, but you have to take a rapid test before you get on the flight.
Right.
So there you go. So it's already kind of here. So just imagine that happening in a conference. So you go to the conference before you can walk in, you have to take a rapid test.
Right.
So spit here real quick or whatever it is. I don't know how the rapid test goes, but and maybe there's a kiosk that does that. And if you're blink red, you can't walk in. If you're green, go. So maybe some of that, comes down the line. But again, I just think there's such a yearning for folks to get back together. And I think we will get back to that. You know what I mean? Just out of the pure nature of being human beings. It's not for everybody. Sure. Right. Some people will say and use this as a linchpin for the next decade. You know, I don't travel because, I don't like putting myself in that type of environment. Not everybody's vaccinated, et cetera, you know, whatever. It's just another reason why those folks and fine, you know, it is what it is.
No, yeah. I agree that I think we will end up back there and it won't, you know, like it may, like you said, we may be looking at a couple of years before everyone feels comfortable with it again. But I think we'll get back there. I think it's a, You are right. I think it might be somewhat of a uniquely American thing too. Like just this desire. Like, you know, I think we have
different cultures,
part of our mentality of, you know, the travel,
different cultures,
travel part you mentioned. I know a lot of people that, like, you know, they look at conferences as like their vacation the most. You know?
Oh yeah.
Like, it's like, sure, I got to do some work, but I also get to have a heck of a lot of fun. You know, we know that when we go to some of
the part about that is because, you know, I was on the road a lot, but when you step back and you think about it, and because my kids will ask me all the time, so where have you been? What cities? Let's look at the map.
Right.
Oh, well, I've been here, 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 and here. And it looks impressive when you think about it over the 25-year career that I've had and all the places I've gone. Then I sit back and say, well, you know what? I've really only seen the airport and a hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
In Salt Lake City,
right?
You know,
yeah,
it's just a really nice view from the airport, right? But that's all I've seen.
It's not
in
like
Salt
you
Lake
walk downtown for 3 hours, right? Or, you know, checked out all the cool local shops or every attraction. Yeah, it is. That was always kind of my thing with the travel too. Is like I didn't mind traveling, like when I was in more of a sales oriented role, but I did feel the same way. I always felt like, man, like I just kind of show up and do something and then leave.
Yeah.
So like I would make an effort whenever I could to try to find something.
At least do something.
So if I got done, I was done working with somebody at 4 or 5 o'clock, I was like, all right, what can I go do? What kind of cool local thing can I go check out?
And
honestly, weird aside here, one of my favorite things to do when I'm in a random city is to go to their zoo.
Oh, that's awesome.
If
that's
I
a
have
great
time
idea.
To kill, especially like if I've got a few hours before I need to be at the airport or something, I will find the local zoo and just go walk through it for a couple hours.
What a great idea.
I've always loved doing that. So I've done that at least 3 or 4 different cities as I've traveled around. Like, I'll just go find a zoo.
Then you appreciate the Cincinnati Zoo even more.
You do, actually.
Because we do have, like, one of the top-ranked ones.
We do have a great zoo here compared to some of the other ones I've been to. So.
Yeah, but, I mean, Americans like to get on the road, right? We like to travel. Yeah. It's part of our DNA. So I don't know. I don't know that's going away. But it is true. And when you talk to the people in the industry, because, in fact, I was just talking to the folks at Cvent yesterday, because we use them as a third party for some of our registration and stuff like that. And so I was asking the guy, I'm like, so what are you seeing? I mean, you live in the event industry. What is your crystal ball telling you? And they think that H1 2021 is going to be, you know, silent. A lot of virtual, that's going to continue on. But they are starting to see people scheduling conferences in like the August timeframe. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they're laying their hope right now. And that seems intuitive. You know, maybe we'll start having some amount of conferences and stuff like that, but we'll see. You know, and who knows? Everything about this pandemic's been really,
it's been a lot
really,
of we'll see. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's exactly why I think I wanted to talk about all this stuff, because it is this idea of like we keep saying we'll see or when we get back to normal, when we do this, and realizing like, look, it's not that simple, and it's not going to be that simple at this point.
You know? No.
There's still so much nuance and so much that we've got to consider before we get back to anything close to what we thought we had before. And by the time you get there, stuff is going to have changed so much that there's not that normal no longer exists anyway. A couple other quick things I want to touch on. Remote work.
Yeah.
We're not going to dive too far into this because we literally have an entire podcast all about remote work. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't listened to that, I highly recommend go back and check it out. It's the two of us again riffing on the whole world of remote work, what it means, how to approach it, you know, how to think about it. Again, it's something we kind of wrapped up that conversation saying like this is not something that's going to go away. A lot of businesses found this to be a useful strategy.
Yep.
You know, maybe a lot of micromanagers that used to be terrified of this idea before realize like, hey, my people actually are still productive when they're at home. And it's going to open up your workforce in a way that you have never really thought about before. When you can have someone working on the opposite end of the country, you know, and not necessarily someone that has to be local to your office, you know, that you can, you know, have working for you every day.
100%. Yeah. And not only that, it's just the flexibility, even on work hours. You know, the 9 to 5 is shifted. You know, people have lives. You know, there's, what was it? Secret parenting was, I came across an article as it talks about work from home and how when we were all in the office, it was the shaming of having to do secret parenting. And what they meant by it, and I totally get this, is like, yeah, you're in your cubicle, you're in your office, you're doing your day to work, but there are certain elements still of being a parent. I mean, if you had kids that are teenagers, you're getting text on your phone from your kid about whatever.
Right.
Hey, I'm at volleyball. Things are running late. And so there is this whole idea, and that's just an easy, you know, use case. There's other more dramatic ones, but it's the whole idea that, you know, you felt shameful being a parent while you were at work because you're supposed to be at work.
You're supposed to turn that off.
You're supposed to turn that off. that's completely blown up now. Yep. Because now, we, you know, when you do Zoom calls and WebExes and kids are running around the background, it's like everybody gets it. You know, everybody has lives. Oh, by the way, you know, everybody has lives outside of the 8 hours that they're working. And a lot of times that blends into it, one another. So I think
it's
that's
hard.
One of
it is hard to turn that off. Like it, well, it's hard to assume that someone can just click off their personal life for 8 hours a day.
But here's the good news. Yes, extremely hard to do, but now it's accepted.
Right.
Just like that. You know, it's like, it's almost like a flip of a switch that, you know, if I had somebody say, hey, okay, hold on just a second, my kid's got a thing here real quick. I've been on countless Zoom calls now where that happens. You know, somebody's talking and then something happens in the background. They have to go tend to something.
Right.
They're not ashamed to do it. Right. You know, they go attend to that and the conversation continues on, you know, with the other members and stuff like that. And the person comes back in. Yeah. So, I mean, can you imagine doing that? Like even just a year ago, it would have been like, what did that? What just happened to that person? What is that person doing?
What do they think they're doing? Yeah,
they think they're on their phone. What's going on? So I think I think there's been a complete cultural shift in that we all get it.
Yep.
It's kind of like, I guess, soldiers, and this is way too dramatic, but soldiers that are in trenches and stuff like that, they get it. You know, they get the atmosphere, and if you lived that, you just have this certain code amongst them. Yep. And so all of us kind of have that code amongst us now that, oh, get it, you're at home, the dog's barking, whatever, your mother-in-law just walked in the door, whatever it is. So that's changed dramatically.
This is very much one of those things that I feel like should become the norm. Like, you know, that's a new normal right there, is the idea of understanding that people have lives outside of work and that sometimes that life is going to intrude on work. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they don't want to work. It doesn't mean they're not going to get their work done. Mm-hmm. It just means that in that moment, something else has to be taken care of that is, you know, more important than work, and that they'll still come back and get their work done on the other end. And I feel like that's something that hopefully a lot more managers and owners and executives understand.
I agree wholeheartedly, but you know, the flip side of that, and to be honest with you, there are some people that don't react very well to that, meaning that they need the structure of being in an office environment, and they don't operate very well when there's not that, or dealing with distractions and stuff like that. So there's a certain contingent of people.
And that's okay. Maybe that means then you're saying like, look, we are going to, our workplace is designed for your work style.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone that needs to be here in the office to keep rigidity and structure, to keep your day moving, fine.
Yep.
We've got the office for you here. Yep. You know, it may be a smaller office than we used before, maybe less space than we had before. Maybe you cohabitate with other people, whatever, in the office potentially. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, for everybody else that, you know, if you're fine with flexibility and you don't mind working odd hours and you've
still
got
getting
other
stuff
done,
like
we'll give you the opportunity to work from home and do what you need to do.
There
at
you
the time
go.
You need to do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hope that sticks.
So work from home was another one, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we tackled that in another podcast. If you want to hear more about it too. And then I kind of want to briefly talk about future-proof solutions, which I feel like is something that you hear a lot of people give lip service to, but I think it's going to become more important than ever to be able to go to someone and say, hey, the solution we're going to provide for you is not just about right now, but it's about a year from now or 2 years from now or 10 years from now as things change or if something dramatic happens. And yes, there's stuff you can't predict. Like no one last year in 2019 was saying, hey, we're going to help you out so that you can get through a pandemic if it ever happens. I mean, it'd be awesome if you could do that. But, you know, mostly if you did that and you tried to offer that to somebody, they would kind of laugh at you and be like, whatever. But I think, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with what is happening with a lot of our partners, especially on the software space, and the idea of like recurring revenue and the idea of, you know, as a service solutions where it's not about like trying to just give you everything right now and give me all the money for this. And then we'll revisit this in a few years and see if you need all new stuff, but more about, hey, we're going to give you what you need right now, but we're not going to charge you all about it right now. We're going to charge you a monthly fee to keep this stuff updated. And if along the way a new product becomes available or a new software or something that needs to be changed or innovated because the world is moving on constantly, then we can come back and swap things out and change it out and just keep charging you our monthly fee as we go along. I think that I have a feeling that kind of as a solution or as a service aspect, which we are obviously big, you know, proponents of and, you know, tout everywhere we can and recommend for everybody. I think that's going to become more and more of a norm in not just in this channel, but I think in a lot of businesses. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of businesses that are going to be able to come to people and say, look, we get that like this is what you need right now, but what you might need 6 months from now could be entirely different. And last year, this year just proved that. So let's talk about, you know, software as a service, our hardware as a service, our solution as a service. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That's really, really intuitive. Because one statistic I'll throw, as I was listening to you, I was thinking to myself, you know, one of the retail industries, if you want to call it, that's down a lot is the auto industry, 20 to 30% down. And so that's dramatic. But one of the things that they're changing, so, okay, so sales are down, but what they're, the changes that they're trying to make are creating smart cars that they can turn on and off features within the car as individual upsells. It's kind of like where you're going with the future proofing of your solution. Whereas you buy the car, but, oh, you want to turn on the heated seats? Okay, you can do that in your app, and it's $500. So they're getting more out of the individual sale. I love the conversation we had with Terry Miller from ShipTrack, where he was indicating the use case where they were doing a rollout, and it was going okay. You know, it was rolling out. But when COVID hit, they needed to get that, and they needed to do signatures, you know, on-site signatures, have that feature built in, like right now. And so the company had to make the choice, well, do we reprogram all of our stuff? It's $200,000. It's 6 months of whatever. And Terry's like, well, no, we can just flip this switch on their solution. And now you can take signatures on site. So future-proofing, right? Yeah. I love where you're going. And absolutely, because resellers, I know you've heard it here, have to be solution providers, more and more and more consultative solution providers. So the more that you can future-proof what you're doing and what you're offering, the better position you're going to be. Oh, you need that? Oh, yeah, here, let me just go in here and turn that switch on.
Right.
It's $5 more a month per unit. You good with that? Okay, good. You know, we just solved your crisis, and we got it done. So, I like that one.
All right, well, you know, I don't want us to take too long here, but I kind of want to talk about a couple other quick things, which is, you know, maybe start thinking about some industries. Are there any industries that you think are in actual danger, like ones that may not recover from all of this, or maybe they, you know, or they're going to have to change very dramatically to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And then also maybe think about some new industries that might be arising, like that, or strengthening that weren't there before. I think like a couple that I immediately thought of, and I thought of industries in danger. One, cruises.
Well, yeah,
I know that's kind of niche-y. Right? But let's be honest. The cruise industry, I think, was in danger for a while anyway. Like, I mean, I'll be honest. I haven't wanted to go.
That's
on a
your
cruise
germaphobe
in
you. The cruise industry was doing really well.
But,
look at the ships they were building.
But like, true.
5,000 people.
Is it just me, or did you not hear about a new cruise liner like being lost at sea, or adrift, or whatever, or tilting sideways, or on fire,
or
food poisoning breaking out? Like, I feel like there was constantly something happening anyway. And then suddenly this pandemic hit, and what was one of the first things that we heard about was a cruise with, you know, where the pandemic was spreading amongst everybody on the cruise. That was
like wildfire.
One of the first things before it really took off here in America that we heard about.
And it couldn't dock because nobody would take it.
Exactly. Right. Like, so I don't know. Like,
the cruise industry, you're right.
Part of this might be my own bias. My wife is always like, you know, wanted to do a cruise, and she knows that I just have no interest in this because I'm like, one, I can't swim, so like, you know, I'm not a big water guy anyway.
You're like my daughter. How does that boat even float?
Right. Even though I don't mind being on a boat necessarily, but it's just like, man, being out at sea on this giant city with all these people, and if anything goes wrong,
it's like a nightmare for you.
It really is. And then you throw the germ aspect in it.
But here's the issue with the cruise industry. The only way they get back is if they can prove that their air circulation is like the cleanest in the world.
Definitely.
So if I owned a cruise line, that's where my innovation would be. And by the way, you know, companies that come out of crisis, those study after study will show you the ones that are successful in doing that are the ones who innovate when they're in the crisis.
Yep.
So cruise industry, if I owned a cruise ship line, I would be all in on trying to make that air cleaner than brand new oxygen. I don't know what. I mean, it has to be the cleanest thing and prove it to the world.
Right.
Clean Air Cruise. I might even rename the whole cruise line Clean Air Cruise. That'd be the branding and marketer in me.
Yeah.
But it's not coming back until that happens.
Yeah. I think that one is one that could be in a lot of danger. But like you said, if it doesn't go away entirely, it's something that's going to have to change very dramatically to survive.
Yeah.
And I think the other one I thought of too, before I let you jump in on some here, is brick and mortar only retailers. Like, I mean, you know, I think most retailers obviously realize they had to shift their dynamic in some way. But there are some that I know that, you know, said, no, we're not going to do this. We're brick and mortar only. Like, it's just what we do. People come to our store and that's it.
Yep.
And granted, if they didn't shut down already and potentially go out of business, I can't see, like, we've talked about this many times, many discussions we've had with various guests about online ordering and omni-channel, BOPIS, all of this stuff, curbside pickup, that is not going away. That will never go away. Just because people don't have to do it anymore, if, even when they feel comfortable walking into stores and being around large groups of people again, I guarantee you a lot of people are going to be like, man, that's fun. The same way that, like, you know, Amazon didn't, you know, didn't destroy, you know, every business.
Nope.
But it still didn't go away.
Right.
And it still put an impact on a business.
Sure.
And a lot of businesses had to shift their models and shift the way they operated in order to compensate for that. I think this is another clear example where if you're trying to run a retailer right now and you think it's all about your store and nothing but, and you don't have any interest in expanding beyond that, you're not going to survive.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. No way. Yeah. Got to happen. So some of the things that I was thinking about is online. So, you know, online consultation, that's one thing that, you're going to see many, many, many more of that. Really, and kind of anything online as it relates to digital engagement, if you will. I mean, think about it. We're all nesting at our homes now. So if it has to do with your home in a digital type of environment, whether it's gaming, whether it's entertainment, whether it's a connected house, whether what anything like that. I mean, these are some industries that I think are going to see a lot of a lot of uptick here over the near, certainly in the near future. Some of the other things I was reading about, and it seems a lot of sense to me, paid services that are even like video services that are online. So fitness studios that are now pivoting towards not here at my location, but you can still subscribe and do whatever there. Teletherapy, we've talked about telehealth. I mean, that just seems like so intuitive that I don't need to go to the doctor for those initial visits. Just let's just get on a Zoom call and let's talk it through. And
I don't need to come in for a cold.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know? Why would I need to do that at this
point? What's the point?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I was thinking the drummer in me, you know, music lessons, stuff like that. Why can't you do that through online? So anyway, you're going to see paid services in that type of an environment. I think a lot of that will be happening here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the only other thing I want to kind of throw in, like, when I was thinking about like outside of our channel, I feel like we've kind of dove in and out of the channel anyway. But like I have a feeling and this is right up my alley, the contactless world is still going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us are going to realize, like, man, there's nothing bad about not touching all the stuff. You know, like it's okay to like be a little more contactless and distant, you know? Like, I mean, I was never like, and I know this is one of those uniquely, not to say American things, but something that definitely is a big American thing, the handshakes and the hugs for everybody that you meet everywhere all the time. And it's one of those things I'm like, you know what? I don't care if that one necessarily goes away. Because I was that person. If I shook your hand, I wasn't touching anything until I got to some hand sanitizer probably later anyway. And it was nothing personal against you. You might have been the cleanest person in the world, but I don't know that, you know? So, like, I feel like, you know, the idea of this semi-contactless world, at least, where there's a lot more options, and that's kind of touched on a lot of the other stuff we've talked about anyway.
Yep.
I don't see that being something that goes away. I think people are going to realize, you know, there is some value in that. There is some value in being clean. There is some value in, you know, not touching something that thousands of other people have touched when you could make it contactless in some way, you know, and whether that's a pandemic from a virus that we don't know much about, or just the common cold or common bacteria or the flu season, you know, like it's all good stuff not to be so easily and readily just wiping our hands all over stuff every day.
But that's just the germaphobe in you coming out.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I'm going to drop one on you then.
Okay.
You know, industries that are in danger of changing, if you will. What do you think about social media? And here's where I'm at with social media, and I think a lot of people are at with social media. It's like, you know, it's a forum, but man, it's really fatiguing. It's really fatiguing when you have nothing else to do but sit here and read.
What do they call it now? They call it
rants.
Doom scrolling. Have you heard
doom
that?
Doom scrolling.
That's what they call it, like, when you're on Twitter and like you're just scrolling through all the stuff that makes you angry and annoyed and just frustrated.
Yeah.
They call that doom scrolling.
So I mean, to me, it seems like it's just become this environment where it's kind of like when you're out in the schoolyard, you know, you got the people that talk the loudest, they're over there and they're still bullying and talking loud and doing their thing. And then everybody else is just milling about getting stuff done. It feels like social media has become that. It's just like this personal megaphone where you can go out there and just do all this stuff and there's no consequence for what you say. And you don't even have to be you. You can be this fake persona. And the veil's off. Everybody understands that that's what this is. And
at least you hope they do.
Well, I'm wondering. Well, some people are, you know, might still think it's all, you know, everything on the internet is, is real. It's on the internet.
Right.
Type of things. Okay. So you're going to have that contingency of the population out there. But in all seriousness, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't mind. I mean, I do hear people talking about, hey, I've turned my social on low. The social volume in my household is now on low because it's just, it's too much. And it's like, and what are you getting out of it at the end of the road? It's not the best news. It's not the best conversation. It's not the best anything.
Right.
It's just a lot of noise. So what I don't need in a pandemic is a lot of noise adding on to my already stressful thoughts about, you know, home, life, work, blah, blah, blah. What do you think?
I agree. I think beyond even this pandemic, but I think this has exacerbated the whole problem with social media because of, you know, disinformation or, you know, just an overload of information or, you know, stuff that doesn't make you feel good about anything, you know, that you're constantly seeing. But I think in general, I think social media is going to have to change. And like, and it's funny because I always keep seeing these, you know, the tech giants and the heads of like Facebook and Twitter and whatnot or whatever, talking to the folks on Capitol Hill about like, what can they do to, you know, to fix this stuff? And the bottom line is there's not much you can do to fix a lot of it, you know, unless you create something that most people are going to turn away from anyway, because they feel like, or a lot of people think it restricts them in some way. Mm-hmm. I just think in general, I think a lot of the social media as it exists right now is going to collapse over the next decade or so. Mm-hmm. Just the same way that like there's plenty of stuff that was popular, you know, in the 2000s that is no longer a thing now.
Right.
I don't see Rubik's Cube.
No,
yeah, well, yeah. It might be a little further back.
Oh, sorry.
I don't think, honestly, I don't know that Facebook lives for another decade.
Right.
At least not as it currently exists. Yeah. Kind of the way how MySpace still hung around.
Or it'll be the gray hair book.
Because
it's just old people like me or whatever.
Exactly. Like, I don't see that surviving. Like, I'll be honest, I am getting fairly close to shutting down Facebook for myself. There's very little I find of value. I will go 4 or 5 days without even checking it and not even miss it or realize it. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that's one that'll go away. Twitter could end up doing the same thing. Like I find myself using Twitter a little bit more now than I used to just because I like the little quick chunks of stuff. And I feel like there's, if you're, depending on who you follow and what you do, there's a lot more funny stuff on Twitter. Like Twitter makes entertaining a little more. It can be awful, but it can also be entertaining.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff that I think is going to change. And I have a feeling a lot of the social media as it exists now
is going
to
look different.
If we look back at this in 2030, will not be the same or will not even be there anymore.
Yeah, I think it has to, because I'll lump in the other statistic that I heard recently that kind of made me pause for just a second. The age group that the pandemic has hit the hardest, what do you think it is?
I think you would be, instinctually you want to say like the oldest.
But it's not.
But I would imagine not.
It's age 8 to 23 are the ones that are like, they're handling this very, very hard. It's very difficult for them to navigate. And as I was listening to you talk, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, yeah, it's a mature person that can look at social media and say, you know what, maybe this isn't all what it's wrapped up to be, because I know that life is better than what I'm seeing on this, you know, on this wall or whatever. But if you're 15, you don't know that. This is the world that you're in.
Well, and think about it. When you're that age, when you're a teenager, everything is so much more epic and bigger.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, you know, if someone looks at you the wrong way in a class, like, that's it. Your life's over, you know? You know, my crush, you know, ignored me today when I tried to talk to them. Ah, the world's coming to an end kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you're right. And you hear about this stuff all the time, especially on social media, like, you know, where cyberbullying has become such a thing. And like, I mean, I've thought about it and looked at it too and said, I don't know how I would have handled social media when I was that age, if like the stuff that people just said to me to my face, if they were saying that, and like, you know, I'm not saying I was like bullied all the time necessarily, but still like the things kids do to one another.
Sure.
If you take that and then amplify it by 1,000%
on social
where people feel like they can do anything because they're anonymous, you know, like,
but that's why I'm saying as a society, we got to figure that out.
We do.
And I think that one of the things that it's manifesting, and we've kind of gone off the rails a little bit here and I apologize, but I did want to bring it up because I think that that's really unique about where we're at. And I was shocked that that age group is, but then when I sat back and thought about it, I'm like, yeah, man,
yeah,
this has got to be really hard for them because, yeah, all that, you know, all the chemicals in their body and the sense of just growing up and the hormones is what I mean by that.
Let's be honest.
And it's just,
I think kids and teens take a lot of social cues or a lot of cues from social interaction as well. I mean, it's why schooling is very important and why it is important to be out and among your peers, because if you don't have that kind of interaction, there's a lot of stuff you don't pick up and learn when you've only got your parents to go off of who don't realize like what you need to feed off of, you know, in the same way.
So. Well, because the parents that were growing up in a different era when they didn't have to deal with all this stuff. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, this has been a fantastic conversation. As always, we could go on for another hour or two.
Yes, we could.
But we need to wrap things up. So before we transition over to our recurring segments, I want to, as always, thank our founding partners, Elo, Epson, Star, Honeywell, and Zebra. We could not have this podcast without you, so thank you for your support. As always, if you want to connect with us, first of all, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please go give us a 5-star rating and review. That is how podcasts generate an audience, grow their audience, get more people that might find them in an organic search in some way. So if you haven't already, just take a second, go hit the 5-star. Even if it's a short review saying, love the show, that's enough. That helps out. But if you also want to reach out to us directly to talk more about this topic or have any questions or topics for us in the future, you can find us on Twitter at TechConnectPod, or you can email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, as always, we want to wrap up with our recurring segments, Value of the VAR, and Tech Connecting with you.
Yep.
Obviously, this conversation hasn't been directly about VARs, and yet at the same time,
we touched a little bit on it.
The whole idea of a new normal and the whole idea of figuring out what's next is very relevant to our VAR audience. Yeah. So my question today is, what are some key things that you think VARs should be considering or doing right now to prepare for what's next, whether it's the next few months, whether it's 2021, the next several years? And what we've already talked about is probably going to change.
Yeah, I think that a couple things that come to mind for me specifically when I think about it. As I mentioned earlier, I was reading the statistic, innovation is key. So when you think about what you should be preparing for, what you should be doing now, keep innovation in the scope of what you're doing, because the companies that make it out of crisis are those that continue to innovate and keep that on the forefront. So off of that, as a sidebar to that, I know that one of the things that is very challenging in what people should be doing right now is focusing on motivation for themselves, motivation for their workforce, motivation to keep innovating. I think that motivation is one of those drivers that's becoming even more difficult to do in a remote work environment. It's hard to motivate people when it's just through a Zoom or you're sending an email and you don't know if you made the connection. It's hard to get the passion through on words that you're typing. There's only so much caps so you can do in bold and underlining to get that inflection. But motivation is so critical to keep the ball moving, to keep innovation happening in your business, in the marketplace, et cetera. So that's critical. What people should be doing now is also focusing on networking. We can't do the interpersonal, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be picking up the phone, that you shouldn't be engaging, and doing what I would call increasing your mesh. I like the word mesh. Ecosystem, okay, but now I'm kind of pivoting to a mesh. Right. You have a mesh of people, and these are data points. These are people that are in your world, if you will, that you can rely on, because I guarantee you there isn't a reseller out there right now that doesn't realize that they need to lean on partners during these points in times. Yep. Everybody's leaning on partners that they have good faith, good trust in. I was reading another interesting thing that that brands, large brands right now are seeing a resurgence. And why? When they poll people, it's because these are brands that people trust. So comfort, they're looking for comfort and trust right now. Same thing in your business life. Yep. Those that you've done business with before, make sure you keep that networking going, that you don't, that those ties between you are strong. That's what you can do right now. Bolster those, motivate your folks, and make sure that your mesh is strong.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking about something like that today myself, in my day-to-day role in life. Like, one of our colleagues, Elaine, is one of my favorite people to talk about pop culture stuff with.
Yep.
We both watch a lot of TV and movies.
Yep.
And I realized the day I'm sitting there and I'm like, I haven't talked to Elaine, really talked to Elaine in a week or two, or not even longer than that, a month, probably a month or more, had a real conversation about what we're watching. So I immediately got on Teams today and was like, hey, I'm going to hit her up. And we're gonna have
good
a quick talk about finished watching Lovecraft Country. Did you watch it yet? What did you think? No, we have to watch it. What are you watching? The kind of conversation we would have normally had in the office.
Yep.
And that was the kind of thing I'm like, I'm missing this. Even though I can't, even though I do love working from home and I do like the I don't like the reason we're in our current setup, but I like the current setup.
Right.
It actually works very well for me in my life. But at the same time, I'm like, that is something I'm genuinely missing. And you have to take that opportunity sometimes to make that happen. And I think that goes for the business world. If you're missing stuff that you would have normally done, figure out a way to make that happen right now. If there's a way you can do that, maybe you can't have that conference that you normally went to. set up some kind of meeting with five or six of your favorite customers or something and say, hey, we're just going to have a little happy hour type thing together. We can't do a real happy hour at a show anymore, but I'd love for us to have one. So let's, you know, if you can, meet online at 7 o'clock on this day and, you know, have a beer, have a, some wine or something. And let's
send them that. You can send it to them.
Yeah,
you know, you can send them the beer.
Let's just talk, you know, and let's get together and chat for a bit the same way we normally would.
Just a little bit
There's
of innovation.
No reason not to, Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I think, you know, the innovation part, the other part of it is something that I feel like I've said several times on this podcast, which is don't be the last one in. If you see something new on the horizon and you know it's a thing, and even if you're not 100% sure about it or you're not really sure it's the way to go, start dipping your toe into it. Start talking to people about it at least. Start asking questions about it. Find a partner maybe to have some conversation. Maybe it's not something that becomes a real part of your business model or a real solution that you go out there and provide in the future, but you don't want to be the last one.
You don't.
You know, if you're the last one in and everyone else has already been doing it for a year or two ahead of you, you're just going to look like you're just trying to jump in on the bandwagon.
Absolutely.
Get in right now because you will look like you are a value add reseller. If you're talking to somebody about something and they go, no, that's not of interest to us, and then 2 years later, that's suddenly something everyone's doing, they're going to remember, man, Joe at XYZ company said, was talking to me about this back in 2020. I'm going to go check out, go talk to him about this because he was on it.
And who knows, you might reinvent yourself a little bit, you know, or at least have a nice little part of your business that's a reinvention of what you were doing before. That's exactly the kind of stuff that should come out of this.
Because there's a lot of stuff you can't predict and can't do right now. And like we've just been saying this entire podcast, you can't wait for normal to happen. So figure out some ways to make your new normal, whatever that may be. So.
There you go.
All right.
The new normal.
Let's wrap up. That's been one of those buzzwords I feel like people have stopped saying because they realize this does, again, there's no such thing. All right. Well, let's wrap up with our favorite segment every week. What's Tech Connecting with you?
Oh, I got a good one here.
Chat a little about some kind of cool piece of tech that's catching our eye. Dean, what's Tech Connecting with you?
Okay.
So
what's Tech Connecting with me is I got a gift of a Sonos speaker. Are you? And I know that Dwayne talked about it earlier, but one of the things I love about the Sonos, so I'm a bit of an audiophile in that, you know, okay, I went to school and was an audio engineer and stuff like that, but I love good sounding audio,
Yes.
These Sonos speakers are flipping awesome. I mean, they just have a great sound. But one of the reasons why they have a great sound, you have to do this awkward thing when you first get set up your Sonos. So you plug it in, you get the app, and what the app tells you to do is to walk around with your phone turned upside down, by the way, and the speaker plays this weird sound. It's like it's static and a little bit of a siren like going on. And you walk around the room waving your phone from like the floor to the ceiling as high as you can. And that's what you're doing. You just walk around.
That's awesome.
And it's called tuning your speaker.
Makes sense.
So that's what you're doing. It's using the microphone to kind of see how the speaker reacts to the room that it's in.
Get an audio picture of your room in a sense.
Yeah. And after you're done with that and you play your whatever your favorite song through, it's like, dude, this is awesome. That's
fantastic.
The way this song is supposed to sound. So that's what was connecting with me is like that. Just whatever technology they put into that to actually tune your speaker is so cool.
Nice.
That's just so cool.
I feel I need to get something like that for my television setup. Like we don't play a lot of music around, although we honestly should play more than we do. But like
every house should have at least one good speaker system.
For my television setup. Like I had a sound bar for a while and honestly it wasn't all that good. And like when I got a new TV a couple years back, like it actually sounded a little bit better than the sound bar. But I also know that most flat screen televisions do not really have good sound. So I need to invest in something like that.
Maybe
that's something I'll nudge my wife about for Christmas.
Yeah. So what's connecting with you, my friend?
So this is one of those things that like in any other year probably would have been a huge story and a big event that we would have been talking about. The OSIRIS-REx spacecraft.
Yes.
NASA launched this.
Is this the one that lands on a comet?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, an asteroid,
Asteroid, okay.
Left Earth back in 2016. It arrived at an asteroid called Bennu in 2018 and has been studying and looking at it since then. And basically its goal, the end goal, was to take a sample from that asteroid.
Yep.
Something that has never been done before. We've never landed a craft on an asteroid and taken samples from it.
Yep.
This was the goal. Which, you know, I don't know. Some people might say that sounds simple, but holy crap, that's a huge engineering
feat. Can you imagine how complicated that is?
Yeah. to get a little craft on.
Nothing easy about
and
that.
And mind you, we're
speeding through space.
Asteroids are not a nice, flat, even surface everywhere, you know? Like there's a lot of detail to this. So they've been working on this for a while and like had carefully figured out how to do this. So on October 20th, The craft went into a four-hour descent in order to get close enough to the surface and touched the surface to collect rocks and minerals and dirt or whatever for 6 seconds. Only six seconds.
Yeah.
So this is a years-long project just for it to touch for 6 seconds and get enough dirt. The good news is, well, the one thing they were concerned about is, like, is it going to get enough? So it was going to have to, like, when it went back up, they were supposed to do, like, some kind of, like, centripetal, you know, spinning thing in order to test the mass to make sure they had enough. Well, apparently they had so much that the enclosure wouldn't completely close back up.
Oh, no.
So they had to cancel that, but they were like, we feel pretty good, like, we have enough.
Right.
So we're not going to worry about that. So now they were, like, I think this past week we're actually depositing it back inside of the craft, like, you know,
okay,
enclosing it and holding it in the craft for the journey back home.
Got it.
And now it's going to start making its journey back home. Yeah. It's supposed to arrive in 2023 is when it's supposed to get back to Earth.
Dang.
And we will get
that
to,
is so cool.
Of course, that could also be when some weird asteroid virus gets unleashed and kills us all. Who knows? But I like to think that's when we get to study something that could teach us about the creation of the universe and just something cool and new. I'm a big fan of space travel, and I realize, like, there's a lot of people that look at it now as like, is this something we should be wasting our money on right now? And it's not something that catches a lot of attention right now as much as it used to, but I was so fascinated by this story, and it was just a blip of a story.
Exactly. We've talked about a couple blips that during this pandemic that have
the UFO swept. Thing. You mentioned the UFO thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Who knew? So. But that's a good one, and a little bit more on that, because I saw a thing on it too. So it landed, and it was like this unique little arm that came down and kind of smacked the asteroid. Because
it needed to shake the dirt up.
It's like this thing that lands, you know, puts a hammer on it to literally dust up, create dust around it, and collect that stuff. Really cool.
Amazing. It's one of those things that, like, that makes me think of, like, man, this is the power of human engineering right here, the power of the human mind to come up with how
that.
To do this.
I love that. That's motivation for you.
So that's what's Tech Connecting with us. It is time for us to unplug. We thank everybody for listening. As always, reach out if you need anything. Until next time, stay connected.
The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. Help businesses stay connected with Elo's new Huddle Kit, combining all their collaboration accessories, conference camera, computer module, styluses, and tray into one easy-to-order, purpose-built kit ready to connect with the interactive display for a robust huddle room solution. To learn more, visit Elo's microsite on BlueStarInc.com or contact your BlueStar account manager. Rugged work calls for ultra-rugged devices. Honeywell has you covered with the Granite XP, the next generation of successful Granite barcode scanners, offering highly durable, extreme performance scanning for standard and extended range operations. Created for applications where high-speed scanning is needed to maximize productivity and where durability is non-negotiable for low total cost of ownership, the Granite XP scanner offers the optimal solution. To learn more, contact your BlueStar representative or visit the Honeywell page on BlueStarInc.com.
Interested in selling RFID solutions but aren't sure where to start? Zebra has you covered with a full portfolio of RFID hardware and support services. With growing applications in T&L, manufacturing, healthcare, retail, and more, RFID improves supply chains, streamlines inventory management, and improves online order fulfillment. To learn more about Zebra's line of RFID readers and printers, visit the link in the show notes or contact the Zebra team at BlueStar.